because AI is so good at scripting, at storyboarding, at writing articles, all of these things take so much like pre and post-production time, but that stuff in the middle, that's the human part. That stuff in the middle where we're out there and we're building relationships. And we understand that the EOD airmen or the firemen, you just got to know how to build those relationships. You got to know how to be the human in the loop. You got to know where interpersonal communication comes in, that emotional intelligence that AI is not going to replace.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of The DINFOS Way. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at DINFOS. Joining us today is Master Sergeant Ben Stratton. He's an emerging technology program manager at the Air Force Public Affairs Agency, where he leads AI and automation research, development, testing, and evaluation for the Department of the Air Force's public affairs enterprise. He helps communicators turn AI from a vague promise into practical, ethical workflows that protect public trust, strengthen content provenance, and keep human judgment at the center of public affairs in the information environment. He's here today to tell us more, so without further ado, Master Sergeant Stratton, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be here.
I'm really glad to get so many awesome people in here over the last couple of days. We're having training days here at DINFOS, which brings in great subject matter experts like yourself. And so I'm really happy to have you here, especially because you are at the center of a very controversial topic. And you have a very unique viewpoint on it, which I think needs to get out to all of the communicators who listen to our show and all of the communicators in our career field. Because to be perfectly frank with you, I've interviewed a lot of industry experts, both civilian and military, on our show, and very few have anything positive to say about AI. Most people are very afraid of it replacing us as content creators above all else. And I know that that's something that you've considered, the Air Force has considered, as you look at our career field and as you look at how it works with AI. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we get into it, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about your life and your career and how you ended up sitting across from me today.
Yeah, sure. I joined the Air Force in September, actually on 9/11 of 2007.
Thank you for your service.
And yeah, I never know what to say.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
For that. You're right. You know. I joined then, and I showed up at DINFOS, and I don't know why I have these dates memorized, but October 26, 2007, started at DINFOS, graduated February 14th of 08, and then my first base was Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota. This was, you know, roughly 6 months after, we decided to ship two B-52s loaded with nukes down to Barksdale across America. And so that was really fun showing up, and the media still questioning everything about the Air Force and our mismanagement of the nuclear enterprise.
It was an interesting time to be a communicator.
It was an interesting time, yeah. Especially too, like I'm an E3 showing up at Minot, and 2 months in as a three level, as an apprentice, DINFOS fresh grad, I had to respond to the Emergency Operations Center, which for the missile wing, they called it the missile response cell, and for a downed helicopter. I called my tech sergeant and was like, hey, what? Are you sure you want me to go to this? You got this, Airman Stratton. And I did, because DINFOS set me up. DINFOS trained, so I'm a DINFOS trained BPAS W grad. Came in as a writer. So they trained us in all the things that the PIOs are trained on. We're trained on camera interviews. We're trained on how to write a media advisory, a press release. We're trained on COMREL. We're trained primarily how to write stories, but we're trained on all those other things that are important, and I could do it. So after lots of different crisis comm situations at Minot, I went to Kunsan. I was there for a year, and I ran the internal information and social media program in 2011 at Kunsan, so social media was still pretty new. And then from there, I went to Fairchild Air Force Base, where I met... just saw him in the hallway, J.G. Buzanowski.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Another dude. Great instructor here.
Amazing dude. Yeah. Love him. Really great writer. And we went through a Navy Growler crash incident while I was at Fairchild among, I don't know why, I feel like crisis just follows me. So all sorts of crises at Fairchild, and moved on to Misawa Air Base in northern Japan.
Hey, that was my first duty station.
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it there. Gosh, I'd go back in a heartbeat. It's my favorite.
Love the wild weasels.
Yeah, man, for sure, 100%.
Yeah, so I spent 4 years at Misawa. My first two kids were born in Misawa. And then PCS to the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And I was there for almost 5 years and saw a lot of change. We went through a CPI, continuous process improvement, where we had to merge two different directorates, we had an O6 and a GS-15 that both reported to the 3-star, and then all of a sudden we had to create one voice, one organization. And so worked through that change management and was the CEL, the senior enlisted leader for that. It was an interesting time. And the Academy had its fair share of news through that time. And now I'm sitting at the Air Force Public Affairs Agency, Emerging Technology. And throughout my time, my first deployment was with the Navy. I'm a proud shellback. And
love to hear that.
Yeah. So I'm a few airmen who own a Navy and Marine Sea Service ribbon.
Heck yeah.
Is deployed on the Comfort for a continuing promise
on
in 09.
Too. That's cool.
Yeah, it's I know it rolls a bit with that single prop, but
it's smaller than people think it is.
Yeah, and I mean, living in those berthing areas, it really taught me to appreciate everything I have in the Air Force. And I was also deployed in 2013, Al Udeid in Qatar, and while I was in PACAF, I've had a few trips to different countries. I was on the first air contingent back to the Philippines in 2016, where we went down there with the A-10s and the HH-60s, and we did CSAR, combat search and rescue training with the Filipino Air Force.
That's awesome.
Get to fly into a volcano. That was cool.
Jeez, man. You've had a very cool career.
I have had a cool career. Sorry. If I'm going too long on the things.
I love it. That's all such great experience, because that means to everyone who's listening that you are vetted. You're a DFOS grad who's done a lot of work in a lot of really interesting places and has been a part of this career field for a long time, which is the point I wanted to get across to folks, so that when they hear your opinions on this, they know it's coming from a perspective of someone who is one of us. So with that said, with your huge career that you've had so far, when did you realize that AI was becoming an emerging trend and it was something that was going to become of use to our career field?
It was probably somewhere between 2022 and 2023 when I was at the Academy, and I had to step in as the acting director for marketing for the Air Force Academy, and we were using Grammarly. And Grammarly started integrating AI into it. And so, like, when we were producing articles or we were producing social media content for the Air Force's third largest social media platform, we were using Grammarly. We were using AI to help us edit. And if you really think about the history of AI, we've had AI since the 1950s. But generative AI came onto the scene in 2023 when ChatGPT became super popular. It really kicked off, right? So. But when you look at our Adobe products, and if you've ever been, and I assume you have, if you've been in Adobe Bridge and you've ever clicked auto enhance or auto levels or auto white balance, it's AI. It's an algorithm. It's machine learning. So we've been using AI technically for a very long time. We just haven't been using generative AI. And that's the new thing that everyone's scared about. But we have to answer the question, why? Is it because you don't understand how to use it? Or is it because you're truly scared about what AI is going to bring?
I think it's a combination, to be perfectly honest with you. I think it's everything that you just mentioned. And I think that the biggest fear is that most of us, at the end of the day, we are content creators, regardless of what we're doing, whether we're writing an article or producing a photo or shooting a video or any of those things, right? We're creating content of some kind. It's what we love to do. It's our passion. And that's sort of the public image of AI and what's being taken away from us. You know, you see so many photos being created by AI or so many articles being written by AI. And it terrifies content creators who feel like, A, we're going to be out of a job, but also, B, the devaluation of our career field is sort of what I think people is afraid is happening. And it sort of was what people were afraid of when YouTube was created. You know, we were professional videographers, and all of a sudden there was an avenue and a channel for anybody to create a video and put it out there for people to see. So I think that it's a valid fear. But I also think it's that those fears are guided by a lot of misconceptions. What are some of the common misconceptions you see about AI and how it's going to affect communicators in the future?
So I know I said I am, or I don't know, did I say I'm a BPASW grad?
Because, yes, sir.
Yeah. So I came in as a writer. I came in when we were doing BP&J teams, or PB&J. That's not BP&J. Anyway, so PB&J, right? So you had a photographer, your broadcaster, and your journalist. We would go out as a three-person team, and we would get the content, and we would get the job done. Now, your PB&J team is one person. Which is a lot to ask of one person. It's a lot. But, I mean, I saw the writing on the wall when I first joined. Like, we only got 2 weeks of photo training as a writer. But I showed up at my first space, and I was expected to take photos at different events that I was there covering because the photographers are like, you want a photo? Go take your own photo. I was like, cool, then train me. Give me better training. So I got trained. So I was a photojournalist before our merger in 2010, 2011, when we became a photojournalist just as a career field. Mm-hmm. And then, 2015, I was here, in January for a digital multimedia course. I learned how to edit video. Didn't necessarily learn how to shoot video, but thanks to YouTube, I figured it out. And so I've been shooting video before, our official merger. Was it 2019, 2020 timeframe when we became the X6, the one PB&J airman? So I understand what it takes to get content. I understand how much time it takes to get content. But I understand as a social media manager or as command information NCIC, I understand that sometimes we don't have that much time. Sometimes our boss tells us, hey, I need... For instance, when I was at LUD, I was producing roughly 5 articles every week as a photojournalist. I was producing 5 articles with photos. And then I would grab the broadcaster and we would go do stories together. But it's a grind. There's a lot to get done. But what if we could pivot? This is our moment. This is our moment in history. This is our industrial revolution. The 1900s had theirs. It was all about manufacturing jobs changing. It was all about how things were built changing. This is an information revolution. This is all about how public affairs, how communicators are going to change. We have the opportunity to own that change. If we sit back and we're scared, we don't get to own the change. But if we embrace it, then we get to own where AI is used. And that's the important thing we have to look at here. Don't be scared of it, because if you're scared of it, you're going to get owned. If you embrace it, then you get to control it. That's what we have to do.
That makes sense. And you're right, because regardless of our feelings about it, it isn't going anywhere. You know, a large part of what you guys do over there is not just coming up with cool AI tools to use in our career field, but it's discussing and coming up with ways to use it responsibly. So what does responsible AI use look like to you for a day-to-day use for a communicator?
Whenever you use an AI tool, you have to use it ethically, first and foremost. And you have to understand how will using this tool impact the public's trust. And we do that by embracing content provenance. Adobe has talked about that and has been a key leader in the content authenticity initiative. We have Divids that's embrace C2PA and all of that we get with provenance built into Divids in our historical records now. I think Mr. Betts was talking about 5.8 million records have been updated to support C2PA. So how do we prove to the public that our stuff is true? It's by embracing the provenance, by showing the receipt of record on how the content was created. Should we use AI to create content? In the right moment, in the right time, in the right place, because it can save us time. And in the Air Force, we're embracing where we're using AI. We're embracing AI in writing articles, because that takes a lot of time, that you could be used to train or work on crisis comm training, or most PA shops in the Air Force at wings, most airmen sit in command information in the content production. So 70% of shops sit in command information. That other 30% is doing media, is doing comrel, is doing crisis comm, it's doing admin, it's doing plans and programs. That's a lot of things to get out of 30% of your shop. But what if we can use AI in this moment, in this pivot, to reshape, to refocus where we put the humans? We use AI, what AI is good at, with effective prompting of AI. We use AI where it's good at, and we put humans where they're good at, because humans are great interpersonal communicators, even if we're introverts. Sorry, you can't see me raising my hand, but super introvert. I'm going to go home.
We all end up in public affairs. Isn't that funny?
It's funny. Right, yeah, right. All these introverts in PA, put on the PA hat, and all of a sudden you can talk.
Yep.
Yeah, so if we rethink and we reshape where we put the humans, we have to put the humans where they're really good at. Historical documentation cannot be done by AI. Historical documentation can only be done by the human on the flight line documenting that aircraft or tank or ship. I won't call it a boat because that would offend some people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we have to understand where the humans can be the most effective and where AI can be the most effective. And then think about when we're writing our comm plan and we're building out the campaign, this isn't just an article or this isn't just one video story. This is a video story that, hey, maybe the media would be interested in this article or this story. Maybe this is an opportunity for us to bring in the honorary commander associated with that unit so they can see that unit in action and be part of that moment. This is bigger than just one story. This is taking our PA shops and using everything that PA is good at, not just content production.
You said a lot of great stuff there. There's a couple of things I want to touch on. First and foremost, the importance of the digital provenance, because we need to maintain that credibility. There's been a huge, I would say, worldwide backlash almost to AI created content. People, generally speaking, aren't fans of it, I don't think. But with that said, there's moments for it to be used. There's moments where it will provide value as a whole. Now, with that said, how do we maintain that credibility by telling the public when we're using AI, how we're using AI, what receipts do we have that we're going to present to people so that they know this was human created or this was partially made by AI, or sort of what does that look like as you guys are developing your rules and regulations?
So I had a question during my briefing earlier, and they talked about what if my audience hates AI? What do I do then? I said, then give them the human content. That's why we build a campaign. We build a communication plan. We build PAG. We develop the wholesome PA build out of how we address this. And we have to think about our audiences. We have to think about where, like I was saying earlier, we have to think about where human content is important. And then we show the content provenance that that ensures public trust, right? If we can't show where the content came from, then what are we doing? It's showing the receipt, showing how it was developed. And say you write an article and use AI to write the draft, but AI doesn't have one white common access card. The AI doesn't have release authority. Humans have the release authority. So use AI to draft to speed up the time to write the comm plan, to understand the big picture, feed it your commander's priorities, feed it higher headquarters priorities. What are our lines of effort here? And it's really smart about connecting all of that together, right? Mm-hmm. But what AI isn't good at is actual creativity. AI can write creative stuff, but it's based on human creativity. AI isn't great at necessarily, like humans over time, what has made us the best animals on the planet, right? It's our brain. Yeah. It's our ingenuity. We come up with so many amazing things, like we created AI. So let's use it. We created AI to make us more effective as human beings. So if we embrace it, and like I was saying earlier, if we use it effectively, ethically, and with provenance to show receipt of record. So if you're writing an article, maybe the byline shouldn't be you. Maybe the byline should be your shop. But put in the editor's note, yeah, we used AI to help us create this. Because transparency is how we get to public trust. If the public knows something is AI and we admit to it, then they're going to trust us a little bit more because we're just being genuine. And how do people connect? They connect with humans.
100%. And another thing that you mentioned in your briefing and when you talk about this overall is how important that human element and human judgment is behind the AI. Can you give us an example of a decision where maybe AI might help, but where a commander or someone in charge will definitely make the final call?
Say you're sitting in the emergency operations center. You're serving in the emergency support function 15 as PA. You're sitting next to JAG. Well, you can use AI to draft the press release. We have 1 hour to get a press release out to the public to inform them of a crisis, right? How often do we take that full hour to just write the press release when we could have the press release written in 5 minutes and then share it with our JAG sitting next to us and actually have the thing out within 30 minutes? Or we give the EOC director time to review and edit so that we are getting the commander's intent out there to support our response efforts. This gives us time back. Everyone then has a junior enlisted in their pocket who's doing the drafting for us, and then we can do the editing and the review and put out the product that we deem releasable.
If a brand new public affairs airman asked you today, what is the one AI skill that I should start learning to future-proof me or to prepare me for what the future looks like with hand-in-hand with communicators and AI, what would you tell him?
Open a chat.
Yeah, that's simple, huh?
Like, start talking to it. Now, we have developed an architecture called Quill, mm-hmm. and we use Quill to build out in four programs. We have Quill Prompts, Quill Apps, Quill Collabs, and Quill Alphas.
And this is the Air Force, right?
This is in the Air Force, okay. Right. So Air Force Public Affairs Agency have developed this Quill architecture built around these four architectures. And the basis is Quill Prompts. And what everyone gets with a Quill Prompt is a continuity of understanding that every time I use this Quill Prompt, it comes from a three-block structure. It has a Quill block, it has the activity block, because everything we do in PA is, according to our Air Force instruction, is an activity, whether it be command information, media operations, community engagement, mission partner support, plans and programs, administrivia, right? So all of those are activities within PA. So then that's your activity block. And the prompt block is what makes that prompt special. So now we can go back to having a PB&J team in prompts. So we can have these highly specialized prompts that are really good at this single thing, but with the Quill block, every single Quill prompt then comes with the understanding of, I'm a coach. This airman needs me to coach them. This sailor needs me to coach them on how to use AI better. This service member needs me to coach them on this subject matter, on tone analysis of the media's response to my base or my camp or post, right? So we can, if you use a Quill prompt, you will always get that coach. You will also get a confidence rating. So anytime it's talking to you, it will not give you its output until it feels 95% confident in its output. So it will ask you follow-up questions to make sure it has the context so it doesn't hallucinate. By nature, AI will hallucinate because it doesn't have the context. Like, you wouldn't go into the barbershop and say, hey, barber, I need a haircut. That doesn't tell the barber anything. You tell the barber, for me, I say, well, I would like a medium-high fade with a one on the side and just a trim on the top, and make sure you get those eyebrows because they get super bushy. So that is a prompt. We have been prompting our whole lives already. We're just prompting humans, right? So then take that and prompt AI. Make sure the AI has all the context it needs so it doesn't hallucinate, so it gives you what you're looking for.
I think it's vitally important if we're going to use this correctly, at least it's been my experience and I think everyone else's, that you have to learn to prompt appropriately or else you're not going to get anything that you want out of the machine, right? Because I think for me, just at my personal opinion, the thing that's so frustrating is our continued insistence on calling it AI when it's a language learning model. And I understand that AI is just easier to say, but there is no actual artificial intelligence. And I wish people would stop using the term, but you know, marketing, right? You've talked a lot about how AI makes us faster and more adaptable. Are there still situations where slowing down is the right decision and where we need 100% of the time that human element from start to finish?
Forensics, safety investigation board. Any time that lawyers might be involved, right? So when we're doing alert photography or alert videography, if the judge can't trust that the imagery they're looking at is real, then what are we worth? That is the number one thing AI cannot ever touch. And you shouldn't even be hitting the auto enhance button on that imagery. You got to do really great work in camera with your settings when you're getting the raw image. You shouldn't even be editing that raw image, because that then creates an opportunity for them to question the integrity of your imagery. So should AI ever touch forensic imagery? Absolutely not. That's the one thing it should never, ever touch. Because then that questions our integrity as a career field. That then questions, why are we even using you to capture this historical documentation we're going to use to figure out why that growler crashed in the farmer's field west of Fairchild? Why are we using you to capture imagery of this domestic abuse case? Why are we using, like, think about all of that forensic imagery that we capture as a career field and how critical that is to any courtroom. If AI touched it, then is it real? It has to be real. It has to be true. It has to be, have the integrity. And encourage, do what's right. That was a basic training motto for me. Anyway, so forensics, AI can't touch it. That's the bottom line. That's where we have to draw the line.
Trust, I think, is everything in communications, especially military communications. And for folks who don't know, it's the DinFos motto, strength through trust. And so you've mentioned the steps that we're going to take to maintain digital provenance and how we're going to inform our audiences when we use AI, when things are created by AI, and of course we have to do that. If you are an audience member or as a person who's an expert talking to our audience, what other ways would you tell them to look for, to keep an eye out, to know when things are human created, when things are AI created? What should they look for?
It's so hard right now. This statement is something that is, I think, the scariest thing that we have to consider. Everything, every AI we see today, every AI deepfake or AI, every AI video or content you see today is the worst it will ever be.
Yeah, isn't that terrifying?
And it is amazing. It is so hard to tell.
They finally got Will Smith eating spaghetti down.
Right. Like,
I saw it.
And it looks like the dude's actually eating spaghetti, right? It doesn't look like he's got 5 bazillion different fingers who are going all sorts of crazy things with, right? So how do you tell what's real and what's not real? I think it's too hard to tell right now. Unless, as communicators, we admit when we use AI. If we say we use it, and then when we don't say we used it, then hopefully people will start to trust, okay, cool, this is a real thing that I'm looking at. Because Air Force PA said, this is a real thing. Because whenever they do use AI, they say they use AI. And I mean, you're right, that's so hard. But one of the briefings I saw yesterday, I said that public trust, it is all-time low, and it keeps getting worse and worse. And in 2024, they did a survey and found 46% of Americans trust what the government says. 46%. How do we combat that? And that was already like trending before AI hit the scene. How do we get the public's trust back? And I think that's a great topic for a working group. I don't have the answer.
Yeah. Well, I think it's changing the perception, like you just said. It's by doing what we are continuing to do and planning to do in the future, which is tell people when we're using it and tell people when we're not. And once we establish that trust, I think it's easier to maintain than, you know, trying to create it out of nothing, which is what we're trying to do right now. But as long as we start the standard at we'll tell you and move on from there, I think that will become the accepted standard. And I'm real proud of Adobe for doing the exact same thing. They're a huge part of the digital provenance area where they're watermarking things digitally to let people know what's AI and what's not. So you can look in the metadata or whatever it is that you need to check to make sure of what's real and what's not, which is phenomenal, which is exactly what it should be, I think, as far as maintaining trust. Because we have to, as you said, that credibility has to be there. Besides the writing of press releases, which I think is a really good example, and other things that we've talked about now, as you look a little bit in the future, where do you think AI is going to make a real difference? Not really just in theory, but in practice.
It's the knowledge work, yeah. Right? It's the, so we have over 65 prompts that we have developed at the Air Force Public Affairs Agency in Quill prompts, right? And 21 of those are command information. We've developed story coach prompts for print, photo, and video based on the Morrell Media Awards, based on all of the amazing data that the DINFOS Pavilion platform shares.
Yeah.
So we're building prompts that are based on human judgment, that are based on what humans look for. And like AI will confidently tell you this is a really great article and then it's terrible. But if you prompt it well, if you prompt it effectively with this training, this understanding of what good looks like, then it actually gives a pretty decent first draft. It looks like something that, well, probably even better than the articles I was writing as a writer here at DINFOS. And so we have to understand how to prompt better. Now, we have to use AI ethically. We've talked about that. And where we're going to save time is reshaping how we use humans and how we use AI. And the CSAF AI Pathfinder team actually reached out to Chief Kilmer. She's our crew field manager, and asked her, hey, we want to do a AI Pathfinder study on your crew field. And at first they wanted to do enlisted and officer, and she said, let's just start with enlisted. So she came to me, and we dug through all 198 enlisted tasks. These are our on-the-job tasks that we have to learn after we leave DINFOS. As a fact, there's actually 428 total tasks between enlisted and officer. These are all OJT we have to learn after we get to the wing or first base. And so we actually assessed all of those tasks against, is this human only? Is this AI augmented? Or is this AI replaced? It turns out 69% of those tasks, of the 198 tasks, can be AI augmented or AI replaced. And most of them are command information. Because AI is so good at scripting, at storyboarding, at writing articles, all of these things take so much like pre and post-production time, but that stuff in the middle, that's the human part. That stuff in the middle where we're out there and we're building relationships, and we understand that the EOD airmen or the firemen, you just got to know how to build those relationships. You got to know how to be the human in the loop. You got to know where interpersonal communication comes in, that emotional intelligence that AI is not going to replace. All that stuff in the middle. The AI can help you with the pre-production and prepping for that human in the middle stuff and the post-production and save you time. So where do I see our career field in 5 years? That wasn't necessarily the question, but I'm kind of pivoting to it. It's the embracing of pivoting where we put the humans versus where we use the AI. It's understanding that, yeah, there's all sorts of tasks in that and every airman does that can be AI augmented or replaced, because AI is so good at the information building, that information environment that we live in. And so we have to be really smart about where we're putting the humans so we don't lose the humans. If we reshape, we refocus how we're effectively using our PA communicators, and we'll be prepared. We're not trying to get rid of our airmen. We're not trying to get, or sailors. So I keep saying airmen because that's me. Okay. That's where I'm at.
I know you mean service members.
Yeah, service members, right. We're not trying to get rid of them. We're not trying to replace them. But we want to have time for training. We want to have time for the things that the AI can't do. The AI can't go down and hang out in a newsroom and build those relationships with the media. AI can't go hang out at the mayor's office and build relationships with the mayor's office and the mayor's team and the mayor him or herself, right? It's those relationships that the humans have to be better at. And we're not. We're lacking because we spent so much time and effort focusing on this content production because the wing commander said, I want 5 stories a week. And we were like, yeah, sure. We'll do that, sir. And so now we're locked into that. But because of that, we had to shift manning away from the Comrel, from the media, from building those relationships, even mission partner support. You think about that and how we need to be better at working with governmental organizations. So like if you're overseas, you should be building relationships with the embassy. That's critical during a crisis because you should be contacting the embassy. And we did that when our F-16 jettisons a fuel tank in Lake Ogallala in 2018. And we had to work with Fifth Air Force. We had to work with the embassy, the Department of State, right? So that because it was such a critical moment in time, and thankfully we had people on staff who know what to do. But how often do we see shops today where there isn't a master sergeant available as the superintendent? It's an E6 who's filling that position because we don't have people. So now you have E6s who are trying to run shops and lieutenants who are trying to run shops. So how can we help them? We can help them by showing them and teaching them how to use AI and how we're not replacing them with AI. We're using AI to help us train. We're using AI to save us time on the things that AI can do the best and shifting the people and the manpower to the things that humans can do the best.
I think you've said a lot of things that people wanted to hear that people hadn't really considered in our career field, and some things I know I hadn't as well. So thank you for that. The one question that left that I want to ask you is, you know, in this world of AI where hopefully we find a way to cohesively walk hand in hand and use it to help in our tasks, in our daily lives, what is going to make a public affairs professional stand out still in this AI-enabled workplace that we have?
Be the most effective communicator in the room. We see this in the industry. The industry is looking for people who are really super smart at one thing. They want people who are, so like for instance, they want really super smart strategic communicators who are also AI fluent, right? So the industry is looking for really amazing photographers, really amazing broadcasters, really amazing public relations specialists who are AI fluent. That is how you set yourself apart from the folks who are scared of AI. If you are the ones who are embracing AI, if you're the ones who are like me, I keep raising my hand. I know that this is audio and no one can see my hands raising. So there, yeah, I said it. I've been raising my hand a lot. I talk with my hands. Anyway, so I watch a lot of YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube to understand how to do AI because there's all sorts of creators out there who are sharing great stuff. Well, then I'm watching it and then I'm trying to figure out how do I apply this to the DAF PA enterprise? And that's what we do at the Air Force Public Affairs Agency is we own programs that support the enterprise, that support our airmen in the field who are getting the mission done at wings. I come from 5 wings. That's my background. I come from 5 wings and many of them, so when I managed the budget at Misawa, our annual O&M was $10,000. So I come from a background of how do we do this and it doesn't cost us any money. Well, that's where the Quill prompts come in and you're using GenAI.mil, it's already provided. And we think about how do we use the contracts that we already have available to us. And when people say, I need this new, really cool, super new software as a service, I need this really cool, this cool new contract that'll do this thing for me. Well, can we do it in Office 365? We have a Jella contract for that. Yes? No? Okay. Well, can we do it in Adobe? Because we have a great contract with them. And can probably do in Adobe. In the Air Force, we have the Public Affairs Productivity Portal, which is how we manage projects, which is how we manage equipment. Can we do it in there? Can we do that, the thing that you want to do in there? No, okay, well then let's build it in-house. Let's build it with Quill. Quill prompts, Quill apps. We are building a native Swift Mac app that will intuitively understand when you're talking with it, I need to pull this prompt for this situation. I need to pull this prompt for this situation. We're also building a field kit that will be the step one. The field kit will come before the Mac app. Mm-hmm. The field kit will be, it'll teach you how to use ChatGPT Codex, which is a Mac app, or a Windows app, and then also use Ollama, which installs models locally on your device, and it will convert that ChatGPT app to use those local models. So Gemma 412B from Google is a very effective quantized model that you get a lot of big frontier model kind of output out of this little tiny model that runs on an M1 MacBook Air with 16 gigs of RAM, right? So how do we keep PA data on a PA device? We don't need to touch a frontier model. We can do it for free, right? How do we save the taxpayer dollar? It's finding ways to do it in-house.
So what I hear you saying is to be future-proofed as a communicator and to continue to stand out, it's really the same as it always has been. Be good at your job.
Be good at your job, right?
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Matt Sarton, you've actually really given us a lot to think about today, and I think most importantly, have taken away some of our fears, both mine and some of the listeners I know. So I really appreciate your time here. I look forward to having you on again as you guys continue to develop your strategies and plans for the future on how AI is going to help us. Is there anything else you wanted to add? Maybe I forgot to ask you, or anything else you think maybe the listeners would need to hear?
No, I'm really grateful for this opportunity. I'm grateful to Chief Scaff and the War Media Activity for inviting me out to DINFOS Training Days. I'm grateful to everything that DINFOS set me up for throughout my career as a really great foundation. So just happy to be here.
Man, we're happy to have you. Thanks so much for coming on. Again, I look forward to having you back in the future, and I appreciate it, and I hope you have a great time for the rest of the training days. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.